This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Time is an increasingly scarce resource. How we spend it depends on a lot of things, like our income level and whether or not we have children. A new survey, the first comprehensive government study to measure Americans' use of time, confirms that men spend less time doing housework than women. Who would have guessed? And both sexes spend the lion's share of their free time in front of a television set. But the study also includes a few surprises. How much you read, for example, depends largely on how old you are. Younger adults read for only 8 minutes a day, while the oldest group in the study spent an hour with their noses in a book or a magazine. And along with curiosities like that, the study has important implications for how we think about unpaid work, like housekeeping and childcare, and how it affects the economy. Later in the program, polling booths are open in many places around the country. We'll talk about the effect of early voting and your letters. But first, time and how we spend it. How do you decide to divvy up your time, hour by hour, through the day? How much of your free time is really free? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Diane Herz, an economist with the Bureau of Labor Statistics, project manager for the American Time Use Survey. And thanks very much for coming in today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
As we mentioned at the beginning, this is the first ever study of its kind by the government. Why now?
Well, there's actually been an interest in this survey for quite a while. Early in the 1990s, there was quite a bit of interest in this survey from primarily economists who were interested in measuring unpaid work. And their concern was that the gross domestic product did not accurately measure the whole economy because it only measured market transactions. And when you look at time use, you have the option of measuring other things like unpaid work, such as childcare, housework, and volunteering.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you assign a value to that? Or maybe you have to be an economist to figure that out.
At BLS, we don't actually assign the value. At BLS, what we do is we produce this input data with this information on how much time people spend. And then economists in other organizations are likely to take this data and use any number of techniques to attach values to it.
And we should explain that the survey was conducted by the U.S. Census, which is quite experienced at such things, while you guys at BLS made up the questions.
That's right. That's right.
Now, as I understand it, you looked at four main categories: work, child care activities, household duties, and leisure. How did you come up with those categories?
We actually look at many different categories. We have categories for all the different things that people do in the space of a day. But in our first press release, we focused on four areas so as not to overwhelm readers. And those were the four that are of greatest interest. So we actually have information on all sorts of other things: volunteering, religious activities, eating and drinking, sleeping, all kinds of activities.
And more detail later, maybe?
Right. There'll definitely be more detail. We have a coding system that has 438 different codes, and not all of them are large enough to make estimates, but many of them are.
Now, we mentioned a couple of the findings at the beginning, some obvious, some not. Run through some of the more interesting ones, or the ones that interested you the most.
Yeah, what I think is interesting, the first thing we did is we thought about how people would want to look at this, and we just averaged all the different people that we asked, and we averaged them across the days of the week, and we came up with a pie chart of the 24-hour day, and it made no sense at all. And the reason it didn't is because we had workers with non-workers and retirees, students, etc., all in the same pie, and we ended up with a figure of something like 3.3 hours of work per day. So then we realized that to look at the data, you really have to constrain every comparison. So one of the more interesting ones, I think, is a comparison of married full-time men and women who are 25 to 54, full-time working men and women, mm-hmm. 25 to 54 with kids.
Most of us are full-time men or women.
Exactly. So what we decided to do was compare these two groups. And we came up with some interesting findings, and that is that even among full-time workers, men and women both, men worked quite a bit more than women did. Men averaged 8.0 hours a day of work, and women averaged 7.7. But on the flip side, women spent twice as long doing care for household members, about 1.5 hours compared to half that by men. And household activities took up almost 1.5 hours for women and compared to half as much for men. So there is this difference in gender, even among a group that is that similar.
Did you throw cooking and that sort of thing in there? I wonder also on the male side, what about gardening, mowing the lawn?
Yeah, mowing the lawn is a much less frequent activity than cooking or cleaning. And what we found is that I believe it was half, a much larger proportion of men, of women than men, did any cooking or did any cleaning on the given day. I think it was 2/3 of women did some kind of cleaning during the day compared to a much smaller portion of men, and same with cooking.
Is the greatest variation in results between men and women?
That's just one of the first things we looked at. Mm-hmm. I think we'll be finding a lot of differences among other groups as well. For example, if you look at the likelihood of working on weekends, the bigger differences are between multiple job holders, self-employed people, etc. You get multiple job holders are far more likely to work on weekends than anyone else, and so are self-employed.
How many people were surveyed for this study?
About 21,000 in 2003, but the survey continues every year.
And obviously over time, as you get longitudinal, I guess is the term of art, then you can find out trends and patterns, that sort of thing.
That's right. Each person's interviewed only one time, so we don't track individuals over time, but we'll have data for new individuals every month going on indefinitely.
And it was sort of an interesting method that you used in surveying. Borrowed it, what, from the Nielsen folks?
Well, there are many, many time use surveys done all over the world, and this is a pretty standard methodology. We ask respondents to go through their day, and the interviewer, it's a telephone interview, and the interviewer says, yesterday at 4 a.m., what were you doing? And the person usually says, I was sleeping. And then they say, and then what did you do next? Where were you? How long did it take? Who was in the room with you? And of course, we don't ask the who question for all activities, but for many of them, we do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned sleeping. One of the results that I was curious about, we constantly read about how we're in a crisis of a country that does not get enough Z's. 8.6 hours of sleep a night. Pretty good.
Yeah, we were surprised by that, too. And then at first we thought, oh, well, maybe we're overstating sleep. So we looked at some of the prior studies in the U.S., and this figure was in line with those. And then we also looked at how the groups varied. And what we found was that teens slept more than 10 hours a day, and older people slept more than average as well. But workers spent a lot less time sleeping, about 7.4 hours for full-time workers.
And do men or women sleep more?
Exactly the same among that group I mentioned, married full-time workers with kids. The same to a hundredth.
Really?
7.43 hours is what we came up with.
That's astonishing. When you get coincidences like that, you better check your data.
Right.
Diane Herz, I wanted to thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Diane Herz is an economist with the Bureau of Labor Statistics and project manager of the American Time Use Survey. She was with us here in Studio 3A. A link to the survey's key findings is available on the Talk of the Nation webpage at npr.org. So if you want a more in-depth look at the findings of the survey, you can go there. Again, the address, the Talk of the Nation webpage at npr.org. To get a better sense of what these findings mean, we turn now to Jeffrey Godbey, a professor of leisure studies at Pennsylvania State University, and he's been studying how Americans use their time with his colleague John Robinson of the University of Maryland since the 1960s. Mr. Godbey joins us by phone from his office in University Park, Pennsylvania. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
How do you get a job as a professor of leisure studies?
Well, you know, it may sound funny, but it happens that people's use of leisure is fairly critical in terms of their health and a big component of the economy. So it's a kind of focus of study that's just naturally evolved.
Okay. Now, as you know, we've been talking with Diane Herz at the Bureau of Labor Statistics about this survey. How does this new data compare to what you found in your research over the years?
Well, we've seen some changes. People don't dramatically change how they use time, but the biggest change has probably been the increasing number of hours as women have entered the labor force and then sought careers. And there's been an almost one-for-one dropping of housework hours as women have added hours of paid work.
We want to hear from you, listeners, how you use your time and whether the results of this survey match your experience. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, totn@npr.org. And Stephen is with us from Merced, California.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to let you know what I do with my spare time. I read about an hour a day. I'm a 44-year-old working male. Well, the point I want to make is that I have no spare time. Any time that I don't have blocked out for something to do, I will feel guilty if I spend any kind of leisure activity. I think a lot of people feel the same way. There's just no leisure time anymore at all. We feel like we have to work, work, work all day until we sleep, and then we feel guilty for that. So that was my only comment.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Jeffrey Godby, is Stephen alone?
Stephen is probably not correct. When we ask people how many hours of free time they have a week, and they first say, I don't have any, as he just did, then when they ask, we ask them to actually estimate, they may say 16 or 17 hours. But when they keep a time diary or report what they did for the day, the average comes out to about 40 hours a week. And that hasn't changed too much since 1965. Now, people may feel under tremendous time pressure, but time has a couple of qualities. There's duration and there's pace. And the pace of Stephen's life may have sped up dramatically, and he may feel, I've got to be doing this and that. But if we look at the duration of time spent watching TV, socializing with friends, et cetera, activities that most of us would think of as leisure or recreation, it quickly gets to 40 hours a week.
Stephen? I guess Stephen has left us. Probably had to rush off.
That's an important comment, and I'll have to contemplate that.
Okay, Stephen. Thanks very much for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Jeffrey Godby, Stephen, as you say, is typical in his first response of, gee, I don't have any leisure time. People talk across the board about feeling rushed and pressed for time. This survey, though, suggests we do have a lot more than we think.
Yeah, it would seem that our outer lives and our inner lives are disconnected, because if you look at what people do as opposed to how they feel, you get very contradictory answers. And the new study done by BLS kind of confirms what John Robinson and I have found over the years, that Americans say religion is the most important thing in my life, and then we say, well, all prayer, meditation, reading of holy books, attendance at church, synagogue, mosque, services, etc., a little under an hour a week. I never get any sleep. Well, sorry, a little over 8 hours a day. I don't watch much TV. sorry, it's almost 50% of all free time use. So what people believe they do and what they actually do are very different. In fact, you could say, the American public doesn't know what they're doing.
or maybe we're just a nation wallowing in self-pity.
Yeah, it's not that feeling rush isn't a real problem. It is. But when we look at the behavior, there's just a very different picture of American life.
But we do have long lines in front of therapists' office. Why do we feel so stressed?
There's a couple of explanations for that, and it depends on, this is where we begin to, as they say, spend the results. And we can say that we feel rushed because the economy has been rationalized and people are being forced to work faster and more efficiently at their workplace, and that carries over into the rest of life, or that attitude. Or we could say people have a whole lot of things they want to do, and they have the opportunities. They have, many of them have the transportation and the money and the desire, and it's like a kid in a candy store. So how we interpret this finding is certainly subject to lots of ideological concerns.
We're talking with Jeffrey Godby at Pennsylvania State University about how we use our time and how that usage, what that usage says about our lives and our values. When we come back from a short break, we'll take more of your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing a new federal government study that tracks how Americans spend their days hour by hour. Our guest is Jeffrey Godbey, a professor of leisure studies at Pennsylvania State University. He's with us by phone from his office in University Park, Pennsylvania. Of course, you're invited to join us. We want to know if the findings that you've been hearing about ring true in your life, or tell us whether how you spend your time is a choice or a necessity. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Remember, you can visit our website at NPR.org for a look at the key findings of the government's American Time Use Survey. And let's get another caller on the line. Jesse joins us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hi there.
Hi.
I am a senior at the University of Michigan. A lot of my free time is inconsequentially spent reading. And I just want to make a couple of distinctions. One was it seems as if many who complain about not having free time don't equivocate free time with watching the television. So, you know, I've got family members and direct friends who say, oh, well, I never have any free time, yet I'll see them kind of plunk down in front of the TV for 3 hours and then say, you know, it's not even registered as a use of free time. While I, on the other hand, I'll do, you know, reading all day for school, yet still, you know, have my free time and read. So, like, I was just wondering if there were any distinctions made between what people saw as a use of their free time, or, you know, if there was any, you know, response to that comment.
Jeffrey Godbey?
It's interesting that we've had a few people tell us over the years in the surveys we've done, of course I don't have any free time because I spend it all watching television. And, of course, in many senses, that's a choice. Now, one of the reasons people may not think of television as free time is when we look at how free time is distributed across the seven-day period of the week, the majority of free time comes on weekdays, not on weekends. 25 of those 40 hours on average, and they occur in chunks of an hour and a half here, 2 hours there, 45 minutes there. They are tailor-made for watching reruns of Seinfeld, but not for going to the lake to take out your boat.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a great collection of Poe and other short stories that really only take 20 or 30 minutes to get through. I just kind of, you know, have these aspirations that many people would pick up, you know, a short project or something small that they continue rather than watching TV, but I kind of realize that might be sort of a pipe dream at this point.
Is that what you read when you're you have a few minutes?
Actually, I read a lot of modernist works. I was just looking at my Poe, as a matter of fact, which brought that to mind. But I do enjoy short stories when I have, you know, just an hour break here or there. And, you know, also the more I read, the faster I get at it. So I can take out, you know, just a normal novel in the you know, span of an evening or two. And I just feel like I appreciate my free time a little bit more because I'm involved in it and I'm interacting with my free time as opposed to just being passive and let something come at me like a television does.
Okay, Jesse, thanks very much for the call. Good luck with your studies.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Robert. Robert's on the line with us from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay.
That's good. Hey, I had a question. Well, first I'll go with my comment. I have always allowed myself at least 3 hours a night of what I call quality time, because I'm a married man with children, and I would allow that time for my kids, for my wife and kids. But I have noticed now, compared to last year, because I'm self-employed, now that I've built my business up to a point to where I can sit back and relax, I do have more free time to have as quality time or just leisure time or whatever. But I was wondering, in your studies, have you noticed the difference in class, depending on how much a person may make, may affect their time, and also race? And I'll just sit back and listen to the question.
Okay, Robert, thank you.
There are some differences in terms of education level and in terms of income, and there are a few race differences. As an example, African Americans tend to watch more hours of television than do whites. People with higher levels of education tend to spend more time with children, and males with higher education, on average, contribute more to time spent at housework and time spent with child care. The caller's reported hours for, quote, quality time with kids would be comparatively very high. You know, men don't spend a lot of time. I'm looking at data from the the most recent study was an average of about men spent about 2.1 hours per week with children. Now, of course, not all males have children, but the caller's very high in terms of his time spent with kids.
Would that include, as well as bath time and putting the kids to bed, would that include having a catch in the backyard?
Yes. And not surprisingly, we find every single time we do this that the child care, giving the child the bath, maintenance functions, changing diapers, etc., remains very largely the province of women.
Even if the women also work?
Even if they also work, although they're more likely to get help. And the same with housework. What's happened with housework, which is just dramatic, if you go all the way back to 1965, women were spending, on average, about 27, 28 hours per week, 26.9 hours a week in housework. That's dropped all the way to 16 hours a week. And men, went from under 5 hours to about 9 hours. At a certain point, men quit, kind of said, look, I've cleared the table and I've put the dishes in a dishwasher. What more would you want me to do? And so there's just less time overall spent with housework than there was 40 years ago.
Is this a testament to household automation, or are houses just getting taken care of less?
Well, the average American right now lives in 720 square feet of space per person on average, the largest households in the history of the world. So there is more space to clean, but there's a lot less time devoted to cleaning it. And by the way, that difference is not accounted for by cleaning staff or maids or other people that do house cleaning.
Let's talk now with Farrell, who's calling from Oakland, California.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I was interested in what your the polls were saying about computer usage. I haven't heard any mention of it so far, and I would think it would be a big thing right up there with television.
Yeah, probably Battleship alone would outrank Seinfeld.
Yes, and I know lots of people who feel like they spend way too much time on the computer. Is there anything in the polls that show that?
I think that what Time Diary data and actually other survey data shows is that computer use has certainly revolutionized work. Almost half of the American workers report that they interact with a computer in some way at their job. In terms of leisure, computers really haven't revolutionized leisure. They are used for video games and surfing the web, but they don't, they have not made it much of a dent in television viewing, and they have not revolutionized leisure the way that television did. They may, and of course some people like George Gilder say television and computers are becoming the same thing, but that hasn't happened yet. So computers have revolutionized time spent at work. I'm looking at a screen as we talk with data on it, but they haven't yet revolutionized use of leisure.
I'm looking at two screens, so I got double anyway. Farrell, are you looking at a computer screen too, Farrell, by the way?
I see one out of the corner of my eye, yes.
Okay, there you go.
Well, I'm surprised at that. I'm surprised that that hasn't caught up yet because people seem to spend a lot of time surfing the web, and chat room abuse, where they spend 3 hours in a chat room. That kind of thing troubles people that I know, and so it's not shown up yet. They're not telling you anyway.
Well, they may not, and they generally in time diary studies, people won't tell you if they're looking at porn on the web, or they won't tell you about sexual behavior. But that 3 hours is one National Football League game, and if you look at weekends in cold weather, men devote particularly men. Just huge numbers of hours with TV, and frequently what people say is they can veg out in front of a TV. They can kind of numb themselves from the complexities of the world.
Farrell, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Bill. Bill is calling from Modesto, California.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, what happened to me was probably about 25 years ago, I used to have this problem with time, I guess, or time management. And I sat down and I figured out that there were 168 hours in a week. So when I sat down and figured I'm at work so much time and so much time to commute and how much time it took me to eat, and I just took into account everything, I could always get down to it, and it was always like 25 hours I couldn't account for. So once I learned that, it changed my whole outlook on time, and I never use the excuse that I don't have time for it anymore. I always try to commit or do something, and a lot of times people now comment, they say, gee, you seem to do a lot and fill your life up, and I go, well, you have all the time in the world, you just got to know how to use it.
That's interesting. Jeffrey Godby, should maybe all of us keep a diary of how we use our time and make discoveries like Bill?
Yeah, there's actually 168 hours in a week, but I think that what your caller is saying is very instructive. When John Robinson and I kind of pushed our book around, Charles Gibson on ABC actually kind of believed the results, and he said, I kept a food diary for a week, and he said, I had no idea what I ate until I actually looked at it on paper. And he said he thinks the same thing is probably true with their estimates of time. So writing it down, I'm a professor, and when students would ask me, what do you do? And I would tell them, one thing I don't do is watch TV. You know, I'm a highfalutin professor. And then I kept a diary for a week, and guess what? I averaged 17 hours of television viewing a week. I was shocked.
Bill, thanks very much for the phone call.
All right.
Glad you could squeeze in the time for us. Also our thanks to Jeffrey Godby. Thank you for your time today.
You're most welcome.
Jeffrey Godby is a professor of leisure studies at Pennsylvania State University, and he joined us by phone from his office in University Park, Pennsylvania. Traditionally, economists define work as any activity for which people are paid. This American Time Use Survey could change that. Here to discuss this is Daniel Hammermesh, an economist at the University of Texas at Austin. He's with us from the studios of member station KUT in Austin, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This study opens some new doors for folks like you who study the economy. Tell us why.
There's so many things that allow us to do. I think the most important of all, as I think Diane Herz mentioned, is that it's going to allow us to expand GNP accounting. So we'll be able eventually to value and also measure the amount of time people spend on things that are sort of close substitutes for working in the market, like taking care of your kids, like cooking yourself a meal, like fixing your own roof. Things like that.
Well, childcare ought to be easy to calculate since we do pay other people for childcare services. So if you say the parents spend X number of hours, that ought to be worth X amount of money, right?
It's not easy at all. Do you value it at what it would cost to get somebody else to do it? Do you value it at your time? What if the amount of time you spend is partly taking care of the kid, but partly it's also enjoyment for yourself? I mean, it's a whole bunch of issues here which we really haven't solved and we're going to be working on once these data become more available.
We're talking about how we divvy up our time. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Daniel Hammermesh, for those of us who don't understand, tell us how what we do outside of our places of employment impacts the economy.
As we said, the child care is one. But another thing which we don't pay enough attention to is a lot of us work at home. About 20% of people do some work for their job at home. That rises to over a third for college graduates. That's work, but it's also work in a different location, and therefore the changing location affects how we feel about our work. Mm-hmm. And that's just a big growth in the last few years.
How is this going to change the way we think about this unpaid work?
It should make us be more cognizant of it. Indeed, as I understand it, one of the pushes for having these data was precisely to get people more aware of unpaid work and to make it seem more valuable in people's minds. I'm sure it'll do that.
As I understand it, you've done some work on how other industrialized countries, how people there spend their time. How does America compare to Sweden, Korea, whatever.
I've looked at Sweden, Korea, Germany, Australia, and Israel. We're sort of like Australia. We're in the middle in terms of work, in terms of taking care of our kids. We work not that many hours a day. What's unusual about us is we take very few vacations and very few holidays. And you might miss that in the kind of data we have here. Our biggest difference is we have very short vacations. It's really strange.
Let's get another listener on the line. And joining us now is Michael. Michael's calling from Sag Harbor in New York.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm kind of an entrepreneur. I have my own business. And a couple of things that some of your previous call-ins had said rang true. There was a young fellow who was a student, and he was talking about how he gets much more fulfillment and enjoyment out of time that he interacts with when he's doing his leisure time activities. Couldn't agree more. If I'm vegging in front of the TV, somehow it just seems like that's not time well spent, even if you're watching something that's very interesting. A few years ago, after working 7 days a week and building my business, my wife and I decided to make a change in our lives, and now we take off 3 months a year and go to Hawaii, and couldn't be happier.
And I can understand why. that's a choice, obviously, Daniel Hammermesh, that some people can make, like Michael, and most of us can't.
I don't think that choice is open to most of us. In a sense, what Michael's fortunate enough to do, unlike most of us, is to be able to say, look, I have so much income, or I'm willing to accept a lower income to enjoy my time. The biggest problem that people have, the reason people think they're busy, and Jeff Godby talked about that, is that we have lots and lots of things we can do. We have more and more income to do it in, and we haven't been cutting back our hours of work. So it's not surprising we feel rushed, and we complain about it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Michael, you're really messing up all those short American vacation surveys.
Well, I think the digital age has really participated in that. I'm an analog man living in a digital world, and it's been difficult for me with my gray beard to pick up on the technology and to keep on current with it. And I'm not at the cutting edge by any means, but the laptop computer and internet, satellite communication, cell phones have allowed me to be able to have a home that's way out in the jungle. It's off power and has no telephone lines or electric lines, and yet I can stay in touch and help run my business on a daily basis from wherever I am.
Oh, all right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
And if you need some visitors, let me know.
Come on down. Lots of coconuts.
Michael, thanks very much for the phone call. Finally, an email. I was thinking, writes Beth, I was thinking how I spent the evening yesterday. I had a difficulty determining how I would categorize my time. While I was making dinner, I was working on the crossword puzzle. I did the laundry while I painted my toenails. I wrote a test and graded papers. I teach school while I watched the baseball game. How did the people who were surveyed mark the overlap? Are we all multitaskers?
I'm sure we're multitaskers. Think about what Beth does or what you do or what I do. The thing is, they made the decision in creating this survey only to ask about secondary childcare activities. So if she was grading papers as a primary thing and she happened to be taking care of a kid, she'd list that. Otherwise, no secondary activities are listed.
Daniel Hammermesh, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Daniel Hammermesh, an economist at the University of Texas at Austin. He joined us from the studios of member station KUT.